time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, yes, we're on, and it's a special day here at WWGH. We have Kensel Clutter, Don Wilson, and Cecil Denton, and Jeff Ruth is even here today, and we're going to talk about World War II and the experiences these men, and you talk about experiences, wow. And so you listen carefully, and you'll see a touch of what it was like in World War II. And first of all, we've got Cecil Denton, Don Wilson, and Kensel Clutter. Starting out now with Kensel, you were all of you served in the South Pacific, didn't you?
Yes.
Various locations, yeah. Okay, now Kensel, you were a pilot.
I was a co-pilot on a B-24
co-pilot
bomber plane.
Okay, and. Where were you? You were serving in what area of the South Pacific?
Well, actually, we were in out of the Hawaiian Islands for 6 months doing search missions in case the Japs came back, because we had gotten there 1 year and 4 months after Pearl Harbor, expecting that we were going to go to Australia. But they said, no, you're going to stay here, because if the Japs come back tomorrow, we will lose the island.
Wow.
And we were surprised to know that our defenses that was so poor that it to take in a year and 4 months, we hadn't recovered yet. So for 6 months, we flew missions out of the Hawaiian Islands in the northwest sector to be able to intercept the Japanese, hopefully 300 miles out, which would limit their fighter planes and make it possible maybe to put up at least a strong defense. And so for 6 months we did that. We would fly out 800 miles in the morning to and 100 miles across, and then come back the other 800 miles in the evening. It was a 10-hour day. I did 25 of those missions.
No kidding. And you must have, the fuel that it would take to, oh my land.
It took us 500 gallons of fuel an hour to climb. Of course, we only went to 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
But we could get long on 200 gallons of fuel an hour in cruising.
Wow. Now, did you find any enemies to do in?
No, we never saw a thing, except one day we thought sure we saw a submarine dive. And so we whirled around to make a run on it. And a whale come up and surfaced, and so we all had a big joke out of that and merrily on the rest of our trip.
Oh, that's something. Yeah. Now, we'll talk about your demise, how you left the sky rather quickly. After I talked to Don Wilson, Don, you were in the South Pacific, too, in Leyte?
Yes, I was flying off an aircraft carrier as a tail gunner on a torpedo plane. Avenger.
The like we had here at the airport over the weekend.
Yeah, just exactly.
Yep. Oh, wow. Now, you could drop not only torpedoes, but...
400 or 500 bombs.
Okay, yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. And any of those were depth charges? Or just bombs?
They're just bombs,
torpedoes,
yeah.
Okay.
But we could carry depth charges.
Yeah. Okay, now, you were serving in what area of the South Pacific?
It was... Lady Gulf most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah, Lady Gulf. Yeah.
And that's interesting because Cecil was on Leyte.
Yes.
Yeah, but you never ran into each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay, Don, What was your position, or what was your goal on your ship?
Well, my position on the plane was I was a tail gunner on the torpedo bomb, on the TBM.
Okay.
And I had radar, radio, and other electronic equipment to operate. And then right behind me, I had a 30 caliber machine gun to, in case a Jap come up behind,
yeah, right.
At least I could, you know, maybe get a shot at him now and then.
Now, did you have to shoot? Did you have an occasion to fire that gun?
A couple times, yeah.
Okay. But it was rather scary, was it?
Yeah.
Real scary.
Yeah, I thought, well, he was probably scared, but I bet I was as scared as he was, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Could you actually see a plane approaching you? Could you see a pilot in the plane?
No, because the area that I had was so limited, I couldn't even go from maybe 20 degrees either way.
Okay.
But it just kept from coming up behind and making a turkey shoot out of us.
Wow, okay. And but firing that gun, did those guns have any kickback you could...
No.
Did the plane absorb it?
Yeah, the plane absorbed it.
Yeah, okay.
The only problem is you had to, if you didn't fire in short blasts of it, short bursts, where the barrel get hot.
Yes.
And one day there, I was shooting, and I fired too many, and the barrel got hot. The whole inside of the plane was smoking.
Oh, no.
The pilot hollered back, "What's going on back there?" I said, "Oh, nothing." I said, it was interesting, and we had to be catapulted off the plane.
Oh, is that
off
right?
The ship.
Off the carrier.
Yeah, every time. Yeah.
Now, those catapults operated by steam?
Steam, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, from 0 to 90, that's pretty good.
Oh.
trouble is, when I would have to... I had a bench seat, like metal.
Yes.
And I'd have to bend over and hold my head down in order to be able to...
To withstand it.
Yeah, because that jerk, it's jerking back over the back of the seat.
Oh, wow.
Well, one day I was fiddling with the radar, and I wasn't watching the signal guy. Well, we went off, and I'm telling you, bent me back over there, and I thought it broken my back.
My.
4-hour hop, you know, and... You wasn't anything you could do. You just had to bear with it.
Now, when you landed back on the carrier, what was that jerk like when your hook caught?
It was pretty rough, really. Yeah. They say a carrier landing is like what we had when the hook hit the cable. It was like a crash landing you walk away from.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
But they were a rugged aircraft.
And you must have held your breath hoping that hook is going to get that cable.
some of it happened so quick, though, you didn't...
You didn't think much about it. Yeah.
Didn't have much
okay.
time.
Well, now, Cecil, were you on the ground?
Yes.
Cecil Denton. Okay, now, you were on Leyte?
The island of Leyte, yes.
I can still see those words, Leyte, in the newspaper. That was quite a big battle there on Leyte.
I made up with the 24th entry to... The 21st Infantry.
Okay. So you carried, were you in actual hand-to-hand combat or not?
Yes.
No kidding?
Yes.
Okay, now some guns had bayonets. Did you ever encounter anything like that?
Well, no, not really.
Not that close, I hope.
Well, when I got to the front, I was trained as a radio man, communications.
Okay.
And when I got to the front lines, they said, "What's your MO?" And I said, "I'm a radio man." He said, "Well, we don't need a radio man." So he said, "We've lost our first scout, so you're our first scout."
Oh, my.
So they took my M1 rifle away from me and handed me a grease gun.
Oh.
And I thought it was a toy.
Yeah.
But they said, "Now you're the first scout." And I said, "Well, what do I do with this?" And he says, "Well, that's your gun from now on." They call it a piece.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Well, what do I do?" He says, "Well, you don't do nothing right now. You go dig a foxhole because we got to get to bed." So that's how I got started into combat. And
Well, what was the foxhole like digging? What was the soil like? Was it soft?
Well, it wasn't too bad to dig in.
Really?
But we dug a new foxhole practically every night.
How deep did you go in a foxhole?
Well, it depended on what you dig. The time you got your foxhole dug in the Philippines, it was about a third to a half full of water when you got done.
Really?
So you crawled in on your hands and knees and slept.
Wow.
And we was on call for an hour, and then we'd sleep for an hour. And we each had a string tied to us so we could call the guy in the next foxhole as his turn.
Yeah.
And
oh my.
The platoon was in a circle. And, of course, being the first scout, which I was assigned, I was in the middle, in the front, and I was always heading toward which way we were going.
Yes.
And the rest of the platoon... Excuse me.
Yes, okay.
The rest of the platoon was around us, with the lieutenant was behind me, and the radio man was behind him.
Wow.
And that's the way we, every night, why we got a new foxhole practically wow. every night, and the next day why we was hunting Japanese.
Wow, okay. You encountered, I take it, quite a few Japanese.
Well, I have a letter that tells me we first 63 days we got 8,000 and eight something.
Is that right?
Japanese.
Wow.
And
okay.
we took in seven prisoners.
Seven prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the rest of them were, yeah, gone.
Gone.
Yeah. Okay, going back to Kensel. Kensel, okay, you were flying your mission looking for... the possibility that Japanese could re-attack Pearl Harbor. And I understand, too, that when they did attack Pearl Harbor, they missed the doing in the maintenance shops. And so because the maintenance shops are still intact, they could start repairs on some of those ships that weren't sent down below the water.
That's correct.
Yeah. So the Japanese missed their mark there.
Well, one thing that I tell people is it was a terrible thing that they sunk all of our battleships, but in the end it turned out to be a blessing because it left us only with the carriers and small cruisers, and 4 months later when they came back to take Midway Island, all we had was those carriers and those cruisers, and they put up such a battle and sunk so many Japanese ships that never again was the battleship the head of the fleet. They became the carriers now
oh.
that became the head of the fleet. And the Japanese, from that time on, would never confront us straight on unless they were trying to protect their troops at some island that they knew that we would be trying to take.
That's interesting.
And while it was a terrible thing that they sunk all those ships, it turned out in the end to be a blessing.
I can imagine, yeah. Okay. Now, Don Wilson, going back to being launched off the carrier, and you were on a TBM?
Yes.
Okay, now,
yeah.
The TBM is the same plane or type that was at the airport during our big weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Charlie.
Did you ride in that plane?
Yes.
They took you for... Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Did it bring back memories?
Oh, I'm telling you, like I say, the first time, the old tears just ran down my face.
I can imagine.
You hear that engine,
oh.
you know, when they started it up, you think it's not going to run.
Yes.
Yeah,
it sputters and
yeah.
coughs and smoke.
Yeah.
But
once it gets going, boy, it's really good.
Yeah, there's no stopping, yeah.
One of the best things that I think they ever made was that Avenger.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Now, seated in the Avenger, you faced the rear, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I faced the forward part of it because my radio gear was ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
With my
yeah.
tail gun, I'd have to get on my seat and lay down to operate that.
Oh, is that
30L.
Right? Oh, okay.
Just lay on the flat of the...
So, since you really didn't have radar, did you detect...
No, I had radar.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought...
First, I mean, it was new.
Yeah.
You know, but it was pretty good. I picked up a whale once with it.
Well...
So that was pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
Yeah,
yeah, I thought radar came at the very end of the war, but well, apparently not.
No, this was in, well, Lady Gulf was, what, 46, wasn't it?
Yeah, right around there, yeah.
Before the war.
But, you know, I was flying in 43, so...
Wow. Well, and you had radar in 43?
No.
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 Okay, it came a little later.
A little later, yeah.
Okay.
As a matter of fact...
I've got my milk and my bowl and my saucer.
Sounds like you're getting ready for breakfast. What are you having?
Well, I'm having a bowl of golden grams with a side of toast with golden butter and a nice golden glass of apple juice.
I should have known.
Ah.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
/180/111, and I had a stroke. I couldn't speak or walk.
150/90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again with Council Clutter, Don Wilson, and Cecil Denton, veterans of World War II. And as, of course, they all realize, veterans of World War II are coming few and far between anymore. And it's just a matter of time. That's, you know, I'm 85 and, you know, hope I have a lot of years left, but who knows. And you guys have survived the war and are in your 90s, and Kensel is getting close to 100. And Kensel's had an active life after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And Kensel, your maps that you drew of the Sandusky Plains?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. They're on the wall there in the Crawford County Park District. And I think of you every... I look at those and think, that's Kensel. Boy. Okay, now going back, Kensel, you were flying on your mission. And then what happened? What brought you down?
Well, it was a nice mission that in actual combat. We had gone south of the equator from the Hawaiian Islands, south of the equator about 400 or 500 miles, to an island called Nukuvatao, and three squadrons of us was down there, and we was bombing then on the north side of the equator, Tarawa and Macon to start with. We had run 9 straight missions without having it aborted. There was one other plane in our particular 10-plane squadron that also had not aborted, and we was in a race to see who could last the longest.
Oh, no.
And, of course, on my 9th mission, and we got shot up. We went up to Maloa Lap, which was 1,100 miles from our base. It was a 16-hour round-trip flight. And when we got to Maloa Lap, it was clouded over. And, of course, you don't fly underneath the clouds because the Japs can use the clouds as a point to know exactly where to let their shells go.
Silhouette against those clouds, yeah.
Yes. So we went down to Mille and dropped our bombs and was leaving Mille Atoll when a Jap fighter came up and came in overhead, about 3,000 feet above us, and approached about a half a mile ahead of us so that we couldn't fire at him. And he came straight at us overhead, dropped a phosphorus bomb on us, and then came on until he was straight overhead. He did an upside-down flip and come straight down. He was a crackerjack of a shot.
Wow.
And had so many machine gun holes in him, so they never counted him. And we had 10 cannon hits. I'm sorry, 8 cannon hits in us. But we managed to get back to a friendly base about 300 miles away and crash landed there.
Were you ever close enough to him you could see his face, the pilot?
No, but on one other mission as we came in to bomb a thing, we happened to pass a person that was up flying a Japanese Betty bomber. And yes, we could look over and see him, and we was all so startled nobody thought of even shooting at him.
Now, were most of these planes, the attack planes, were they all Zeros, or were there others?
Oh, they had some other fighting planes. Later on in the war, they came out with the Tony, and I can't think of some of the other planes, but they were actually souped up Zeros.
Yeah, and the Zero was made by the Mitsubishi Company.
Maybe you're right.
That makes cars in the United States. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? The Zero, which, oh my land, your kamikaze pilots. Oh, did Don Wilson, did you ever hear of any kamikazes?
Yeah, my carrier took one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kamikaze hit it in that Lady Golf battle.
Yeah.
And two of the guys on the carrier grabbed the bomb because it didn't go off, so they grabbed it and threw it over the side.
My.
I said, that takes a lot of nerve to do something like that. Yeah. Of course, I was flying, so. But then the Gambier Bay, that was one of the six carriers, was hit by Jap surface vessels.
Okay, yeah.
And that was sunk.
Oh.
Now, next month, I'm going to San Diego, my last reunion of my carrier and the Gambier Bay in San Diego. It will go 4 days.
Boy, and I suppose a lot of those men are gone by now.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm the only one in my squadron left.
Wow.
That's and I think out of my carrier, I think there were about eight guys. And they originally were like 1,000.
Yes. Well,
and I think
time takes its toll.
Boy. Yeah. You better believe it. It's tough.
More than any enemy gun.
You know it. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, Cecil Denton, tell us a little bit more. Now, you dug foxholes. You fended off the Japanese. How close did they come to you? Were close enough for hand-to-hand combat?
Well, no, we didn't. Tried not to get them that close.
Yeah.
But I had the grease gun. I had 30 shots in a clip. The BAR man was to my left, and he had 71 shots. And the second scout was to my right, and he had 12 shots. So, and we was in tall grass most of the time. So the time you seen him, you was pretty close. And after I learned how to shoot the grease gun, I had no problem.
In all the excitement of that, maybe your nerves, did they ever calm down in combat like that?
Well, at night, you'd get to thinking about it, how close you come.
Yeah.
But during the daytime, we had a chore that we was going to do, and we done it.
Great.
At one time, we thought we couldn't make it through a machine gun nest, so we called back for help, and they sent up a tank. And the tank came up, and we thought, you know, this is going to be pretty nice. But the tank head man says, now you guys flank the tank. Bad idea.
Wow.
Bullets ricocheting off the tank, you don't have any idea where they're coming from.
That's right.
So from then on, we called for Air Force and strafing, or if necessary, why bomb.
Did the Air Force know exactly where you guys were so they didn't hit you?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, that was your hope.
That was the intelligence you had to...
When you called back for strafing, we was hoping they had the same map that we did.
Oh, I can understand,
yes. So when you call for strafing, you dig your foxhole just a little bit deeper and hope he's got the same map. And so far, I think we were strafed over three times, and nobody got hit.
Wow, that's something. You know, they still undergo things like that in Afghanistan, I understand. Not knowing, in this case, maybe not knowing where the men on the ground are, and they get hit.
They're supposed to know.
Yeah, they should, yes, right. Oh, my. But, Cecil, did you come home the day after the war was over? I mean, you had to wait to get a ride.
We cleaned off the Island of Lady, and then I was on the landing on Mindanao.
Yes, yes.
And they said there wouldn't be much opposition, so we carried our barracks bag ashore. And the landing barge to take us in, they backed the platoon in.
Yes.
So there's probably five or six platoons on one landing craft. But guess where I was? The first man where the plank drops.
Hold on.
I was behind that, down on my knee with my barracks bag in one hand and my grease gun in the other hand. And the Navy boy was taking us ashore. And he got scared because the bullets was hitting this plank that I was behind on my hand, my one knee. And I felt pretty secure.
Yeah.
But he got scared, and he stopped the landing craft, dropped the plank, and there I was, first man in sight.
Exposed, yes.
And the lieutenant behind me, which he was number four behind me, hollered, "Go!" So I went off the end of the plank, and I was over my head in water.
That's what I wondered. How did you know how deep the water was?
We didn't. But the barracks bag would float for a certain time.
Oh.
So I hung on the barracks bag, and the platoon behind me pushed me ashore.
Wow.
And we got ashore, and we got into a trench. And I think we were in the trench for 3 days.
No kidding.
And the Navy and the Air Force come in, and the Navy was bombing the mountain ahead of us, and the Air Force was strafing them, and all we could do is hold something up and see if somebody shot at it before we could get ashore.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, it really, really tested the...
Well, it was the end of the group. The Japanese didn't have the firepower that they should have had. But our job was to clean up, and they were all dug in the mountains. And our best bet was to, they wanted us to go into the caves and bring home prisoners.
Oh, boy, that...
Prisoners was hard to find.
Yeah, and after the war, not all those Japanese in the caves knew the war was over.
No.
And so they you know, some of our men were lost.
Well, I don't want to take up too much time.
That's all right, yes.
But about 3 days before the war ended, we was pretty well cleaned out the island of Mindanao. But I went to the foxhole that night, and the next morning I woke up with yellow jaundice, dengue fever, and malaria.
Oh, no.
In a foxhole. And everybody thinks a helmet is only good for taking care of your head, but it takes a lot of other stuff.
I can imagine.
So I was so sick, so I filled my helmet and set it out behind me. You don't put anything in front of you because that's where everybody's going to shoot. But when you're in a perimeter and anybody hears something, whoever hears it fires one shot, then we all shoot at the same time, and we clean off everything in front of us. Sometimes we got a Filipino, sometimes we got Japanese. One night we got a caribou. But I ended up with yellow jaundice, dengue fever, and malaria, and they sent me back to the field hospital with a fever of 105. And so I took intravenous for 2 or 3 weeks.
Wow.
And
did they send you back into battle then?
No. The war ended 3 days after I got
Oh, really?
2 or 3 days after I got the hospital.
Okay.
But it was a field hospital tent.
Yeah.
And they had wires across the tent, and we was all taking IVs.
Okay. Were you, after the war then, were you still recovering from that?
Well, I recovered pretty good, but I thought I was coming home. I had the points, but I was still single. My lady friend and I decided that we'd not get married till I got home. But when we all went in, me and my...
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McBeal
from Mr. Rogers'
neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All three times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back again with Kensel Clutter, Don Wilson, and Cecil Denton, and renewing memories of World War II. And there's no time like the present to renew those memories, because those memories are going to be gone. Well, the memories will be left to others, but the men with those memories will be gone in a few years. I mean, that's life, and that's the way it is. I often wonder, too, Kensel, being close to 100 years of age, what do you think of the future? I mean, how do you just plan from day to day?
No, I plan so far ahead I can't keep up with it.
Okay, well, that's the way to do it then. Okay, so what are you mostly involved with now, Kensel?
Well, I'm involved with the Delaware Garden Club, gathering seed or projects they want to do, and I'm involved in trying to rename all the people that was put out of the ordinance in 1942.
Oh.
We have maps telling all the owners, but we don't have the names of the renters, and so we're trying to put that together. I am just getting done writing an 18 stanza poem, I think it is, on my most terrible day of my life, when I was shot up so bad.
Yeah.
And as I say, I've got too many irons in the fire. Uh-huh.
Now, your home is near, or was it in the ordnance area?
It was on the very edge of the ordnance area.
Okay.
Yes.
So you didn't have to move.
Well, I at the time, I wasn't there.
Okay.
I bought this farm I got home from the service.
Yeah. Wow, okay. And so it's kind of ironic, too. You guys suffered under bombing raids, but we made the bombs that went the other way.
Yes.
In Marion County, yeah. And I often wonder just exactly what theater did our bombs go to? Was it Germany? Or just what? That were made in Marion?
I really don't know. Do you?
I think they went to both.
Yesterday we had a 4-hour, about a 3.5-hour session at which we brought in some of these people that had worked there.
Is it? And still living and at work there?
Yes. And they told us then what they did with them. They had people call them up and tell them that, well, we got one of your bombs made in Marion, Ohio, and even had the booster station it was made at.
Really?
And the room it was made at, and the time it was made at.
Oh, my land.
And
And where was this bomb?
In several parts of the world. Europe.
Oh, okay,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Wherever they sent the bombs. You know, of course, that they only made bombs 1 year.
Oh, is that just 1 year?
1 year. Then they overproduced, closed the factories down.
Wow.
Then they went into doing nothing else but 50 caliber machine gun shells.
Oh.
And then later on, group bombs or fire bombs.
In napalm, yeah.
Yes. And in the buildings, some of the buildings were never even put into production. They rented them out after they got them built. Closed them down. And they rented them out then to manufacturers who needed more space to build what they wanted.
Yeah.
And some of the harnesses that was made on B-24s was made right here in Marion.
Is that right?
Yes.
Why?
That's the electrical harnesses.
Yeah, will there ever be a book written about that part of it?
They're trying to put this together. Well, what happened is that Brandy come in and taped the whole thing.
Okay.
So she has it all taped.
Good.
Each individual there told his own story. And
yeah, all right. Now, I talked to a lady once that she was in charge of production in a certain line. She said that they suspected there was a German plant or a German spy in among them. And they found out for sure one day when they wanted the military wanted a box of duds so they could practice aerial bombing. And so she said she got suspicious of this box of bombs and looked at it, and they were fully loaded.
Ooh.
And they suspected this man was a German spy or, you know, part of a, wow. And there were rumors, too, of at least one woman killed out there in an explosion during making of bombs, maybe during the napalm era. But no one ever knows for sure. It was never announced of anyone being killed.
No one said anything yesterday about that.
Okay. Yeah, that would be something to find out someday. But there, at least one or two people supposedly were killed, and all was hushed up. Yeah. Okay, well, Kinsel, let's go back to your being shot at, and you say when you landed, what was happening?
Well, actually, as far as we can put it together, I was wounded too bad, and I had to leave the co-pilot's seat. The engineer took over my
case. Really? Okay, so what did you do after you left your seat?
Well, I tried to, you know what a catwalk is through a bomb bay?
Yes.
It's a very narrow thing.
Very narrow.
And I only had one arm, of course, that I could hang on with.
Oh.
And I was afraid of falling off of that catwalk.
Oh, my.
And, but I did manage to get to the open room behind and sat down beside it and put myself up against the bulkhead, knowing that if we made a water landing, I would probably never survive. But
right.
You just do what you have to do. And as we came in to approach into land, apparently the tank that was on fire burned dry and the engines quit as he was making his final approach.
Yes.
Now he overshoots what he has to do. We had no brakes, so he has to get his plane down immediately on the front of the runway, and he's overshooting it. So he goes around, and that's what caused in all the people inside working there on the base to run out to see, what's this roar? We've never heard anything like this before. And that's how we have cameras that got pictures then of us coming back around and landing. And that's how we got the pictures of that. But what happened is the plane was repairable as we went down the runway, even though we had only landed on one wheel in the tail skid. But by the time the wing fell to the ground, it made the plane slide sidewise.
Yes.
The wheels are not made to slide sidewise.
Right.
So they bent flat as a tabletop, put it on its belly, and now it just destroys everything. And so they didn't do anything else but salvage the parts off of the airplane after that.
How did you get out of the plane then?
Well, I was still alive.
Still able to move?
Still conscious. I got up and tried to get out the waist window, which is waist high, but I couldn't do it with one arm. The other man was running for their lives because we had a Bombay tank that we couldn't salvo that was leaking fuel and was afraid that a spark would set it afire or even explode. So they're running like mad, telling everybody run, it might explode. And I'm trying to get out of the plane, and one of them looks back and sees me, and he whirls right around and comes back. And by that time, two or three of the men on the base come along with him, and they help me out.
Uh-huh.
And in the by that time, now the ambulance arrives, and so I go over and get in the ambulance, and then just a few seconds later, the fire crew, of course, they were down the runway and trying to follow us, but you see, we're half a mile ahead of them, so it takes them about a minute to catch up with us.
Sure, yeah. Well, what an experience. Okay, going back to Don Wilson, and Don, on the TBM, you say you were... Who released the bombs, or who released the torpedoes? Who was in charge?
The pilot did the bombs and torpedoes.
Okay. Yep. Now, how did he know when to do this?
Well, because he could see out the forward end of the plane.
Oh, okay.
And see where he's going to drop the bomb or the torpedo.
But it wasn't, he didn't use the Nordic bomb sight. That was on a larger bomb.
No, that was just eyesight, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And the problem he had with the torpedoes, it seemed like they were something in the design of them. They'd hit the water, and sometimes they'd take off, bouncing all over the place.
Oh, really?
Place.
Like
yeah.
A flying fish?
Yeah. You couldn't really depend on where they were going to go.
Yeah. So they had to be angled just right.
Well, then skip. Too, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Just the design wasn't good.
Okay.
The Jap torpedoes were good.
Wow.
So they were ahead of us on that.
Yeah.
But we were coming in one day, and the plane caught fire, and the flames were coming back towards me. And, of course, we got the turret gunner. He's got a 50-caliber turret, and pilot and me.
Yes.
And I called the pilot. I said, hey, these flames are getting pretty rough back
getting
here.
Getting pretty hot, huh?
Yeah. I said, he said, well, you guys better get ready to bail out then. So the gunner dropped down into my compartment. And we were standing there arguing, you shove me out, I'll shove you out.
Oh,
you
no.
know? You know, and the pilot, I kept my intercom on, yeah. And he says, hang on, I'm going to try to do something with this. So he opened the bomb bay doors. It was in the bomb bay.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going to do a few, you know, gyroscopic deals. And he got up, and he went in to dive, and he pulls out, and I watched the flames start dying down. So he got him down pretty good. He said, I'm going to land. And he said, when I stop, he landed on land, not on a carrier.
Yeah.
And he said, when I stop, you guys run. I said, well, you didn't have to tell us that twice. So so we as soon as he stopped, we took off. And then he got out, and he was able to get out before the thing blew up.
Wow.
And that's what I said. You know, that gasoline will blow quick.
Oh, really? Gas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's something. Wow. How scary. But yet, yeah, in the height of everything, did you lose your scariness?
Well, like I say, when you're 18, 19 years old, you're just indestructible,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure. Scary.
One thing about it, you were scared on the way to the target. You were nervous. But once you was into action, you were so busy, you forgot about your scare.
Uh-huh.
And then when you got out, you just simply was exhausted.
That's what I always wondered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like one night we were being chased by a sub, and he was zigzagging.
Yes.
And I'd been flying during the day, and I was on the top bunk, and one of the zags, I fell out of that bunk and landed on that steel deck on my head. Well, they took me down to sick bay, and I think I must have lost the whole day because things I didn't remember.
Yeah.
And I do remember the doctor saying, take this pill, you're all right. And I'm sure it was an aspirin.
Yeah.
that's what he did. So then I went back, apparently, then I couldn't remember everything. And then the next day, went flying. It was all over you.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I figure it must have been concussion, you know, that...
It must have been, yeah.
Yeah.
How many missions do you know that you were on?
Well, I don't know, because sometimes we'd just fly twice a day, you know, and it was, you know, maybe four-hour hops. And and you were just dead tired so much of the time.
We're going to break now, and then we'll be back in about 10 minutes with these men, Don Wilson, Cecil Denton, and Kenzo Clutter. Stay tuned. It's an interesting hour here.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. From legendary comedian Abe Vigoda.
Can you still recite Shakespeare?
Yes. Methinks I am a prophet new, inspired, and thus expiring do foretell of him. His rash, fierce,